Welcome everybody to the Power Management and Energy Awareness session at the Linux Plumbers Conference 2017. We are going to cover multiple topics in this area, including some scheduler related topics and then device power management and more. So with just a friendly reminder to the presenters or topic providers, we are here to discuss things. So please focus on work in progress and proposals and things that you would like to do, and please don't present things that have been already done. So the purpose is to discuss things that need to be done and not the ones that are already there. So we have a full agenda, so let's just get started. And Morten, you're first. So the floor is yours.
Right. So in true LPC style, I'm going to start with the topic without any slides at all. So one of the things that we have started thinking about is what do we do with systems where we are sort of constrained in terms of how much compute do we have available. I mean, we already see SoCs in mobile devices in particular that can consume more power than we can basically sustain. So it's becoming more and more normal that hardware will go in and basically cap which OPPs you have available, or even hot plug CPUs out to make sure that you don't overheat your system, basically. And we're thinking that might get worse in the future, as in it becomes the norm that we're going to operate in scenarios where we basically can't use all the silicon we have available. So currently in the scheduler, we have the assumption that you have N CPUs, and those are always available, and we don't really factor in that hardware might constrain which OPPs, which CPUs can be operating on. And moving forward, I think that assumption is going to slowly break, because if you have, in a mobile phone, I think the sustained power budget you have is probably 2 to 3 watts, and that's for the entire silicon, and you have to sort of budget everything you have going on. Everything takes away from that power budget, your memory, your CPUs, your GPU, modems, all sorts of things. So you have to choose which parts that you're going to basically allocate a power budget. And the same is true amongst the CPUs. You can have various use cases where you have a mix of tasks. You can have some tasks that requires high performance. You can have a bunch of smaller tasks. You can have things that are important or not important. I mean, one example problem that you might have in a thermally constrained system is you can have something going on the foreground, your top app on your Android phone. It might have some important tasks that's really important for your user experience. And the way that thermal management works in Linux today, if you're using IPA, is that it basically allocates power budget based on the utilization of the CPU. So if you have one CPU being very utilized, it will be allocated more power than one which is less utilized. So if you have tasks of different importance going on, I mean, you could have something showing up in the background which is not essential for your user experience. And if that creates a lot of utilization on the CPU, then we might start allocating more power budget on that CPU, which will actually harm your foreground app, so you get worse user experience by having something showing up in the background. So my question is really, do we think it's necessary for our scheduler to actually become aware of the fact that some CPUs might not be available, or some of them might be constrained? Or are we happy with just hardware stepping in and capping performance in various ways that we can't really control? Yes?
So hardware.
Hello.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Cool. We are supposed to throw it.
Throw it. Okay. I won't throw it.
People too hard.
But the hardware will do that anyway, right?
Sorry?
The hardware will do that anyway.
The question is, should we try to build in more intelligence into the scheduler so we can try to do something clever, or should we just sit back and let the hardware control
Some experience.
Yeah?
Yeah, we have some experience. And in our experience, the things that hardware does when it steps in are rather drastic.
Yes.
So we would like to avoid them.
Yes, that's my feeling.
If possible. Which means that we need some knowledge in the operating system overall, not necessarily the scheduler itself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the scheduler and some middle layer on top of the kernel. I don't know, but we will need some knowledge about this just to avoid the hardware, you know, intervention.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion.
Yeah, as I see, there are sort of multiple problems to be solved. One is splitting down your power budget amongst various subsystems, like how much do you allocate to your GPU versus your CPU or whatever other components you might have in your silicon. And then there is the CPU problem, which is which CPUs do you actually want to allocate how much power for?
Okay, so Srinivas is going to talk about that a bit later in the track.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a problem. So on many systems, actually, the CPUs are not the worst or the elephant in the room. So the graphics is usually that part.
Yeah.
So that needs to be taken into account as well, right, when considering any kind of solutions, because the CPUs may be a tiny fraction of the whole problem.
Yeah.
Actually. So the CPU scheduler by itself may not be helping that much.
So you need to bring GPU scheduling along with the CPU.
Yeah.
And also, it's as Rafael said, it's better to do not to do in scheduler level at that level, maybe the higher level either user's panel, something which has knowledge of the system. The other thing I feel is it's instead of focusing on CPU component, you should focus on the cause of this thing, like your processes, like your background process, right? Each process is contributing some factor into the thermal. So instead of considering that this CPU or these CPUs, look at this, profile the characteristics of the tasks which are doing and predict it, we do it, and probably that prediction happens in user space.
Mm-hmm.
And schedule it in the right. Suppose we know that some task is eventually going to, saturate your CPU and power. Maybe put it in somewhere with lower and reduce its priority or do something, which totally. I'm trying to experiment from user space purely. Nothing done.
So, you can do a lot of those things in user space because they are not time critical. So you can. Move things around, by using the existing interfaces to restrict tasks from running on certain CPUs and so on. And the thermal solutions that we have also are in user space, at least partially today. So the knowledge about what's going on from the thermal perspective is there in user space today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so user space has to be involved somehow, which sort of touches on the Patrick's topic, right? Whether or not we need an interface from user space to the kernel, allowing us to say, distinguish between. Today we have only one notion of a tick or a cycle, right? As something that cannot change. It's like that cycle is a cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we may be talking about slower cycles and faster cycles, and some tasks may be given the slower ones only, for example. And I don't know that. So this is like. This involves multiple layers and multiple things, right? And interfaces between them.
Yeah, so In my mind, I think the question about how to split up the power budget, there we need middleware or user space help. I mean, we can't from the kernel tell whether or not for a particular use case we should allocate more power budget to the GPU or the CPU, for example.
So in today's kernels, we have basically it works like if you ask for cycles, you get them.
Yeah.
Right? And the more cycles you get, the faster they become.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's how it works. So this doesn't play well with thermal management, in my opinion.
Yeah. So we always believed that race to heart is the best, right? But race to heart doesn't work very well with thermal management. And also, I'm thinking mobile. Maybe you have problem like race to heart, right?
Yeah, so one more problem is that the thermal budget is maybe understood in multiple ways because, for example, there are problems where the systems have to be held in a specific way, like by the user, and then what matters is the skin temperature in certain points of the system. So you don't want to get that too hot, like, a tablet or something,
yep.
You have to hold it in your hands. So you don't want the skin to get too hot, which may be well below the thermal limit of the design, but the user may not be able to hold the device in his or her hands. So that the skin temperature has to be taken into account in many cases.
Yeah, so if you use the IPA governor for the thermal framework today, it actually uses like a reference temperature, which could be your skin temperature, and uses that in a PID feedback loop. So
right.
It tries to adjust your allocated power budget in a way where you actually hit a target temperature and you stay at that target temperature. So if that's your skin temperature, you can sort of control it. Now the problem with IPA as it is today is that the way it splits up the power budget is based on how much utilization you have in each subsystem. Right now it models the CPU and GPUs. So if you have a lot of stuff going on your GPU, utilization is high and it will allocate a big fraction of whatever power budget it thinks it can sustain to the GPU and vice versa, I mean, for the CPUs. The problem we have there, or what I think might become a problem, is that just using utilization as a metric for how much power we should allocate to a subsystem might not always be ideal. I mean, you can have use cases where just because something is utilized a lot, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily important for the user experience.
Yeah, also, there is a problem, so the components, with the location of the components within the system. Like if something is close to the skin, for example, it will generate more heat.
Mm-hmm.
And then even if it is utilized, then you will not want to put too much power into it anyway.
No, but if you have the feedback loop, like you have an IPA, it should sort of fix itself. I mean, if you're running a use case and you are using a component that will cause your system to heat up a lot, do you just stop that use case or do you want to run it anyway but run it slower?
Well, I don't know. So this is a policy decision, right?
Yeah.
I, as the kernel, don't know.
The problem with skin is like CPU temperature can go up and come down relatively faster.
Yeah.
Once the skin gets hot, it has very high, it will stay for long, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is not to go that level, right? Much, much, much below. Maintain it like in Intel, we say 48 degrees is comfortable. Anything more than that is like, it's too much, yeah.
Okay.
So generally, from our perspective, generally the strategy should be to avoid running into thermal problems.
Yeah. But
rather than trying to fix them when we already have ran into them.
But you might not be able to do that. I mean, if your sustained power budget is 2 or 3 watts in your mobile phone and you have silicon in there that can peak at maybe 15 or something like that, you need to make a choice. Which part of your silicon are you going to use and which part are you going to use?
Yeah, but we can also decide to not to use the full capacity.
Yes, but somebody has to make the choice.
Yeah, somebody has to make the decision. That should be user space, in my opinion.
Also for CPU scheduling.
It is part of a larger, you know, larger picture. So I think, so this is a policy decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to decide whether or not, if you want to run things fast, but then maybe, you know, stop to a halt practically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you can run them slower, but and then without those effects. And that, this is a policy decision. Depends, right? In some cases, you may be wanting the first, and in some cases, you may be wanting the second. And the kernel by itself is unable to tell, in my opinion.
But so you're suggesting that if we have situations like that, we basically want to go in and make task placement decisions from user space using task set or whatever to decide where tasks are running.
That or have an interface to tell the kernel what to do.
Yeah. Okay, that's one way of looking at it. I mean,
or at least have an interface. Or at least have an interface to distinguish between important and non-important tasks, so that you can allocate, I don't know, the budget differently. If you know that, I don't know, your CPUs are running important tasks.
No, yeah. There are no such things as important and non-important tasks. Mm. If there are tasks, we need to run them. If you think they're not important, don't run them.
Well, what I'm basically saying is that, for example, on mobile systems, you know that there are like background tasks which you basically have to run because it's like servicing background workloads. But then if the user is interacting with the device, there are certain other tasks that are actually the latency-sensitive ones, and you can actually distinguish between them. I mean, you want to run everything, but I guess if you have to make a decision between which one you want to, I don't know, penalize, maybe you choose the background ones.
But that is a user space decision.
Yeah, it's a runtime user space decision. I guess if we have such an interface with which the, let's say, runtime can actually tell the kernel, look, those are the less important tasks, maybe we can do better decision on the scheduler and, I don't know, thermal management level.
So essentially, what we want to avoid is to have the frequency go up when we have too much utilization. Like, you know, because some of that utilization may be casual, and we or something like that, right?
Yeah, I don't understand.
So today, if we have
can't ramp the frequency up anyway, because you hit your thermal limits. So who would increase the frequency?
But the problem is that if you hit the thermal limits, then you get throttled.
Get increasing.
Pretty much down to your shoes. And we don't want that to happen.
I guess then put in soft thermal limits somewhere. It is, but that.
Okay, so this is what we are talking about. How to do it.
But we're not going to distinguish between important and unimportant tasks. If you put in a task, we'll run it. End of story.
Okay. I think I can agree with the not trying to distinguish important and unimportant tasks because it's going to be too complicated to try to define it each time for each use case. But I think trying to go with what he was trying to say, if you're going to provide an interface, I think one interface that would be helpful that we have seen issues on is setting a realistic upper limit on the frequency when the thermal condition is hitting. So you could be throttling a 2 gigahertz CPU to 1 gigahertz, and if you don't know about that, you'll try to put two tasks in a single CPU thinking it can handle it, but in reality it doesn't have enough bandwidth to do it. So you want to split it into two, right?
Because with all the fancy new hardware controlled stuff,
But you still have drivers that know about it.
So if we have control of power, we already can set with REPL a power limit, right?
So that's what we try to do, Timothy, but that hits everyone together.
So in the case of the hardware thing, sorry.
Just pass it back.
Okay.
Probably strong.
So router thing.
So kind of related, if we look at like really big CPUs, you can see where we have process differentiation across the chip. Some CPUs can run faster than others, and it's still a question of CPU frequency and where we want to schedule tasks. If you have a task that requires a lot of CPU, how are we going to identify, you know, which CPU? So instead of like, it's like a continual gradation between big and little, we want to somehow be able to assign CPUs that require a lot of CPU cycles to the cores that are running faster. And it's not exactly like the power decision, but it's it seems like the scheduling decisions are very similar, maybe.
So what it boils down to essentially is that faster cycles are more expensive in many ways, because at least in two ways. So one way, because they are more expensive, is because they require higher voltage and you use more energy for them. The second problem is that if you have thermal limits, then they are expensive because you then have to try to avoid hitting the thermal limits. So this way or another, faster cycles are more expensive.
Well, I'm just going to define that away and say no. What's more expensive is not getting your job done on time, and you don't care about the power. I mean, it's not the mobile use case, but you want to schedule. You don't care about the power, but you want to get the job done as soon as possible, and by scheduling it on a faster CPU.
Yeah. Okay. This is what we try to do today, and essentially this is this means that you can afford to pay the cost for the fastest cycles that you can get from the system, right?
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I have a slight misunderstanding of the knobs I have available in the scheduler to steer a task to a particular class of CPUs.
So the problem is here, like.
When there is a process differentiation among the CPU cores, we already have a feature from a couple of kernel versions called ITMT, where it will always prefer the CPU which by process is the highest capable. And that's mostly like server feature. It's not like mobile feature. In server, we really don't care too much about thermal, because we assume that somebody will take care of it. You know, it's
That's what I'm talking about. All right, so it seems like maybe it's not a problem anymore.
No, and also, for that feature, we do assume that once you run multiple cores, you'll hit the thermal limit on the package, and all cores will be equally fast. It's just if you only run one or two cores out of the entire package that this is interesting.
Well, I don't know if that's. I mean, if you have 48 or 100 CPUs, you may not want to run them all at exactly the same point. And so, I mean, the system may decide to run 5% of the CPUs at the absolute maximum, and so and some of the CPUs aren't capable of going as fast as others. So there's
currently we assume that if you peg everything, they're equally fast.
Well, they're not equally fast. I mean,
well,
you build the chip and you can measure how fast they are after it comes out of manufacturing, and then you know how fast they are, and so then you need on a per system basis.
But
to
if you run all your cores in a package, nobody will hit the max frequency because there is simply no thermal headroom for it.
Yeah.
But the thermal problem on servers is solved in a different way, I think, because it is solved in there by adding more fans and things like that on top of CPUs to just take the heat out of the system rather than to deal with it. And on the mobile systems, which have cases like laptops and tablets and stuff, we need to avoid hitting a thermal limit without all of the cooling solutions that are available in servers. That's the problem here. Okay, but we need to move on with the agenda. So, okay, one more comment.
Probably orthogonal solution, but can we do some kind of machine learning to predict how much this application is going to consume power based on its past history, and then based on that, take the decision instead of any kind of rule-based?
Well, that's why I'm saying that user space has to be involved in that.
Yeah, no question about that. Anyway, okay. I think we're already over time. I think we have about 20 minutes per topic. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to continue discussion in the hallway afterwards. So I think Yuri is next.
Okay, so I think this is probably a quick one because I fear I already know the answer. But basically, I wanted to point out, so currently the shared util governor in mainline basically has already the utilization contribution from CFS. Hopefully we'll have the same for a deadline. So there is this patch set that I have to refresh and repost, but it seems to be working. For RT, we go in basically to max every time an RT task is scheduled. What we do in Android, currently we use the RT average. And in that sense, when we're using the shared util governor, I guess that's an indication that we don't want to always be at the highest frequency because that's not acceptable for at least in mobile cases. Vansant actually posted recently a patch for mainline that actually introduces, basically uses PELT to have an RTRQ utilization signal, and actually in this case is basically using this to fix a problem of the CFS utilization, because when you're running, basically if you have co-scheduled a CFS and RT task on the same CPU, basically the RT task is basically removing some of the CFS contribution just because the CFS signal is decayed. Is using this thing only for driving CFS OPP selection, so when RT is then scheduled, we go to max. Basically, I'm using his patch in Android to actually then using this signal to actually drive OPP selection for RT as well, just because maybe not going to max, it's still acceptable.
But then the real-time guarantees are completely out the window.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, RT doesn't give you really any type of guarantee. I mean, the fact is that usually you'd like to go to max just because you don't know how fast you actually have to go to meet your deadlines. And it is true. I guess the practical way to look at it is that it seems that actually on the use cases that we usually run on the mobile space, it seems that the indication that this utilization tracking gives you, it's basically good enough to actually service RT workloads and still save some power. I guess we are doing this because currently, actually, Android uses a different utilization metric algorithm. We discussed that thing last year. So we're trying to basically fill the gap. I guess it's the fact that PELT doesn't have, let's say, an RT contribution thing. It's one of the differences between the two mechanisms, and I guess we'll probably need to fill this gap. I guess the question is that is do we... care from a mainline point of view, or
So no. So the thing that makes it work for deadline is that there is a bandwidth reservation along with it, and that coupled with the assumption of linear
yep.
performance then allows us to make reservations. We could, and I've said this before, look at knobs, global knobs of setting a RT bandwidth and use those to then calculate or reduce the max frequency, but we can't use averages. I mean, if you do averages, there is no determinism left.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah,
and
maybe
that completely
I mean,
defeats the purpose of the scheduling class.
Right. Maybe so. One thing is maybe those knobs. I guess we can probably see if the current runtime, RT runtime or RT period can be used. But then maybe what Patrick is proposing, so having actually a min max frequency knob that you can actually associate to the different classes, maybe can be one thing. Because basically, in that case, you actually it's, let's say, user space that tells which frequency are required for a certain scheduling class, in this case RT, to actually meet the requirements.
Well, we already have what are different knobs called.
So with RT, the problem is that you don't know what they need, essentially, right? This is because you only know that they are RT.
Yeah. So we have the global RT period and RT runtime knobs, and you could use those to lower the maximum. We don't need new knobs for that.
But those also basically are linked to the RT throttling. So
yes,
in this case,
exactly. So that's what you want. It is a bandwidth game.
So let's say that you have one small real-time task, still we go to the maximum frequency and we complete in a run-to-idle way, right? We are just limiting the amount of time that the task can run on a CPU. So the bandwidth is defined only considering the timing period and the quota within a period.
But this is exactly what we do for deadline already. Give a bandwidth.
With deadline is a little bit more smart.
The difference is that for deadline, we actually, let's say, scale the bandwidth, right? Because if we, so we have, let's say, a bandwidth indication at the highest OPP, and then if we run at a lower OPP, we actually scale the time, the runtime of the task, basically, to complete, which is basically not done for RT. Because your period over, runtime over period for RT, that stays the same even if we run at the at lower frequency. So the task will have less time to actually complete. Yeah, that's why basically I was thinking about the utilization, I mean, min-max utilization. In that case, you actually specify in okay, I know that, I mean, because I don't know, did some, because I know my workload, that this RT, let's say, the RT part of my workload can actually, you know, still run fine if I'm running at half of the maximum OPP. And the case is, let's say, more direct. And it's not, yeah.
At least quite a few of the real-time threads in Android kind of end up running workloads that are determined by random, like by the app itself. It's not like Android user space or Android OS layer. So expecting them to know ahead of time what their workload will fit in doesn't seem that scalable, right? So if we can somehow do still figure it out by looking at the runtime. So if your issue is not scaling the runtime, then maybe we should scale the runtime instead of having a min and max. And even if you are going to do min and max, maybe you should just do it in terms of the utilization, like the 1024 number, whatever you call it, instead of frequency. That's one thing.
So I think that the point is just to provide a mechanism where the application can be finely tuned to say, okay, my real-time task requires this bandwidth. And then it's up to the application user to decide, looking at how much energy an application consume, if it's willing to pay that battery for that application, or if he's asking with a feedback the application developer to better optimize his application.
I think your phone won't last long if you do that. Like, you can't have expect a random developer to figure out what he needs and give a good number. I don't think it's a realistic, scalable solution. I think we have to measure what it's using and then try to do that. If it's not scalable, like if you're not scaling for the frequency, then let's do that.
Then you don't have a real-time application.
Yeah.
And therefore, you should not use RT.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah, I mean.
You're saying if you scale the time and decide you're saying it's not an RT app? So, Peter, like you're responding to him or
how much time you'll use? You cannot say if your application is correct. The end.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the impression is that, it is rude. I mean, we're not talking about classic or real-time application because basically we don't have, a scalability test that application actually passes. I guess the impression is that Android has to use RT, the RT class, just to service real, latency-sensitive, important tasks. So it's
conflating two things, unfortunately, because one is the latency avoidance, right, with the performance requirements. They are bundled in RT task today, right? So that's the problem, I think.
In the long run, we're probably already trying to make a better use of deadline for at least a subset of tasks, but there'll be still some. So the runtime, as far as I understand, is not in control of every, RT tasks that are like drivers or whatever that actually are able to create such tasks. So those still needs to be served in some way. And I guess if we just go, always to max, that's not acceptable because it's
I don't mind Android having that little patch in. It's just not something I can see upstream doing in a sensible manner.
Mm.
Because RT is for real-time systems, and we need to have it remain available for people who actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, I guess, good point is that having Van Sam patch and in mainline without actually making the link to Schedutil, using his patch only for driving the CFS OPP selection, then in Android we can probably carry like a small patch that actually adds that thing to the Schedutil governor in the meantime.
I would suggest let's just first add the handling for deadline, and then think what to do about RT going forward.
Yeah.
Because we are not going to solve this problem today.
No.
So let's just have it in mind and proceed with the deadline work. Okay. So is that all, or do you have anything else? Yeah, that's okay. So, Patrick. Doesn't work. Okay.
Yeah. It's not working. I don't know. It's not forwarding. Anyway, it's not a problem. So the slides are linked on the Etherpad. So if someone wants to slow them, it's just a couple of slides. So basically, this topic is about utilization clamping, and we posted in the past different proposals for a new mechanism to expose a user space interface that allows to provide some kind of input to the scheduler in order to give some hints on which kind of task the scheduler has to actually allocate. In the past, it has been named ShadeTune, these features, and is currently used on Android phones to optimize tasks allocation on BigLittle system specifically, but it's quite generic. So roughly, the idea is that the utilization is the signal that the scheduler uses to do two main things. One is to drive OPP selection via the scheduled governor, so selecting the frequency that the CPU has to run. And the other one, when the energy-aware scheduler is in place specifically, is try to understand how big a task is and try to allocate like big task on big CPUs, or if the task is small, we can allocate the task on a little CPU. So it's basically helping the task placement with the energy-aware scheduler that is mainly not in mainline yet, but it's, for example, available in Android, and we are working on trying to make it more easy for mainline. So what we are looking for is essentially a mechanism that allows us to kind of help the scheduler and CPU freak on doing their job, so selecting the frequency and placing tasks on CPU. So if we use just the utilization, the information that we have is whatever the task is really doing. So let's say that we have a big task, it will build up a big utilization and we will move this task on a big CPU. But there can be the case of like background activities, so the user space know that this task is a big task, but it's not really important for the user experience. So we can run safely on a little CPU. It will take longer to run. We'll run it because it's runnable, but we can run it on a little CPU and maybe on a lower OPP, saving energy because lower OPPs usually are more energy efficient. And the other case is we have a small task that maybe anyway is critical for the user experience because it's in the critical path, for example, for rendering frames. And these tasks, the scheduler view of what is the size of this task is not really complete because maybe it's a small task that triggers some important operation on an external accelerator like a GPU. So it's important to complete fast this task. If it is small and the utilization is really small, we want to run this task maybe on a higher OPP or on a big CPU because it has to complete fast to trigger another operation and speed up the critical chain. So this means that in general, utilization is good, but is not conveying all the information that the user space knows about some tasks. And so we posted three different RFC that changed across the time the implementation of this concept ShadeTune. And the last proposal has been posted a few weeks ago where we tried to collect all the comments that we received so far, and especially the discussion that we had at the OSPM summit few months ago. So the main discussion points now are considering the current implementation, at which stage we are with implementation. Is it something that is starting to become mainline friendly? Is a concept that we can try to consider for mainline, or we are still far away? And the first set of comments that we collected usually is what are the use cases that justify this kind of new interface? And we had a discussion at OSPM. I think we more or less collected a set of use cases, basically the two that I described before. So like boosting small tasks, where by boosting we mean that if a task has a small utilization still, we can give an hint to the scheduler and say, okay, please try to select an higher OPP, an higher frequency for this task, if it is small, because we want to complete faster. We want to go for race for completion for this task. Or clamping the utilization of a task or reducing the utilization of a task. Even if it's big, don't consider it like a big task. We can run on a lower OPP. We still run it, but on a lower OPP. And the clamping is somehow related to what Yuri was saying before. So right now, with the real-time tasks, we always go to the max OPP. There can be some real-time tasks that still can be completed because we know what is the real-time problem that we are solving. So we know the timing constraints for this real-time task. And we know that, provided that priority is correctly defined, whatever, if this task is running and we run at this specific frequency, which is not the max one, we still meet the completion time for this task. So it's a kind of best effort bandwidth allocation for real-time tasks. So the mechanism that we propose should try to cover these main use cases. And the first question is, do these use cases make sense or not? Do we already have support to cover all these use cases or not?
So the small task that is important thing that sounds a lot like what we do for our I/O weight. We should express that somebody is waiting for it better, I think, rather than randomly tagging the task from user space that is important.
So sometimes you are stopping on something which is external to the CPU. It's not really seen from, you still maybe get an interrupt when it's completed.
That seems a very, very similar thing to the I/O wait thing. And weren't you telling that the Wi-Fi people were?
Yeah, they're trying. We have similar issue with Wi-Fi throughput.
Yeah, so the Wi-Fi, so the problem with the I/O wait is indeed that the external device is waiting for us, but we don't see this. So we tag it and then we raise frequency. The Wi-Fi people are having the exact same issue. And it's on. I don't know. Does that work better? Yeah, it does. Useless thing. It's very similar to the I/O wait, and can we tag that from the kernel? Can we express this better in the interfaces that we use rather than randomly tagging it from user space?
So the main issue of I/O wait or limitation is that still is one single flag that say go to max freq. That would it generates. Here we are thinking something much why we need user space input, because the user space knows if it provides the task that maybe that capacity level is just good enough for this task. So we can provide a better input to the scheduler and just select a better value for I/O waiting tasks.
So
somebody has to sit and profile your each.
Yeah, so.
So actually the I/O wait thing has been reworked recently.
Yeah, Joe,
right?
Where's Joe?
And it doesn't work quite the way you are describing it, though. Because today it will accumulate sort of utilization or credits, kind of. So maybe this is a right thing to do for this.
And also I think when Joe was poking at it, we spoke of, because currently we jump to max, which is not ideal for mobile. And we had the idea that it might be possible for drivers to provide a max energy efficient or something like that frequency to jump to. So instead of going to the absolute maximum where we burn Uber power, drop down just a wee bit to still make fair progress, but not drain the battery at excessive rates. So there's a knee in that energy curve to maybe go there, and then allow the B-state drivers to express where the knee is for that particular platform. The energy model would have this information, I suppose, but we've not got that fully sorted yet.
It's not a
thing
yet, but
it So it might make sense, especially for mobile, to not jump to the absolute max, even for I/O weight, but jump to an energy efficient max. And that might still work, yeah.
To expand on that, would one potential option be let the driver, which is doing the I/O weight, give an interface to say how to scale the wait time, so you can say if I wait for X milliseconds, consider as I'm waiting as X milliseconds at F max. If you can give a scaling factor, then you can just club it in with the normal utilization and it'll just make it look like the CPU is busy. Right? So if you think your CPU is busier because you want the wait time to be treated as if you're waiting at F max, I'm just giving an example, maximum frequency. Then when you do the utilization adjusting, you'll see that, okay, it looks like it needs a lot of work to do, right? That would be one way to slowly push it up in the right direction, the frequency. And it might be hopefully like an easier interface to use too.
So the way it is defined, the interface is that by default it doesn't really change anything. So the default, we call it utilization clamping just because every time we consume utilization, either in schedule or in the scheduler, we read the utilization value, and if you define a clamp value, you just clamp whatever you read within these two. We have two attributes, utilization min and utilization max. And if you don't set them, you read whatever the utilization represents, and you use the R-coded heuristics within the scheduler, whatever you want to do. But if you have some more information in user space, you can try to feed this information down and help the scheduler on just saying, okay, the user space required for this one, I can go for that value safely.
So, yeah, so I would really like to have more stuff like the I/O weight hint, maybe spread I/O weight around. I'm not sure if people will like that much, but maybe do another hint. And when you say clamp, do you actually clamp the utilization value and affect both placement and OPP selection, or do you split it for OPP
so
and placement?
So the utilization itself is not changed. There is the same. There are just getter methods that allows to say, okay, these are the clamp value for these tasks, apply the clamp value now and
but,
use
but
whatever.
Do you use that for both placement and OPP selection?
In
or
the posting
the
on the
mailing
list. Yeah. So in the posting in the mailing list, we are focusing only on OPP selection just to keep things simple. So when we select the, when we read the utilization for a CPU, if there is a clamp value for that CPU, so we use the clamp value. And in task placement, there is a small integration now because we have only the capacity-aware code paths in WCAP.
But the interface will be split between them? They do not have the same?
No, it's the same clamp value. So the clamp value is defined. The clamp value for a CPU is defined by aggregating the clamp value of all the tasks that are runnable right now on that CPU.
Oh, right, that was pretty horrible last time I looked at it.
Yeah, okay, we improved this one quite a lot, okay, because we removed arbitrees and now it's reference counting based. And I mean, on Eggbench, we don't have overhead at all with the clamp enabled. So it's way better.
But the per task clamp, is that the same clamp for placement and OPP?
Yes. Yes.
So you cannot differentiate?
Not really, in the sense that the OPP selection used the clamp value for the CPU, so there is the aggregation of the clamp values, while for a task, we look at the clamp value for that task. So if there is like a minimum utilization clamp for a small task, we will move this task on a big CPU. And then when the task is there, we clamp the CPU utilization considering this task and the other tasks that are runnable right now on that CPU. So it's kind of differentiated.
If you're trying to aggregate the clamp value across all the tasks on a CPU, is it on that CPU or all the tasks on that cluster? If two tasks are running, one is clamped and another doesn't care, if you're going to clamp the CPU, then you're going to prevent this actual big task from getting enough utilization and migrating, right?
Yes. So the clamp is applied on a CPU, and then scheduler already aggregate the utilization of all the CPUs. And the point is that when scheduler aggregate the utilization, it will aggregate the clamped utilization of every CPU. So if you have a clamped task on one CPU and non-clamped on another, you will go for the max of the utilization required anyway. So it's not really changing what scheduler does.
Then there's going to be a problem, right? Because if you have some random clamp thread running, now you're not going to let another actual useful thread to get utilization and ramp up. Right? Because you're saying you're clamping the entire CPU and the clusters based on the aggregated clamping values of all the tasks.
Yeah,
so one last question. If it's a clamp on the upper limit, are you going to clamp, you are going to do a min or max of the clamps?
So we had the two attributes to the CPU controller, minimum utilization and maximum utilization. Let's make an example with maximum utilization. You have a big task that you don't want to run at the maximum frequency. You set a clamp max utilization for that task to 50%. This task is running alone on a CPU. We will select up to the max to the alpha OPP available, right? If there is another task running with him on the same CPU, we'll get the maximum of the maximum utilization. So if the other task is not clamped, you can go to the max OPP also while the clamped task is running. And the same is holding also if the non-clamped task is running on a shared frequency domain. So it's running on another CPU of the same frequency domain, then we can go up to the maximum OPP.
You can go up to the maximum. we can go up to the maximum because you'll no longer clamp it, or just saying the utilizations together is going to let you go to the maximum? Aggregation across your CPU? No, but you just said you're going to aggregate the clampings across CPUs too. No, no, but when it says scheduled, you're still going to aggregate it or no?
Yes, but across
then.
CPUs.
Yeah, then now the clamping from one CPU is going to affect other CPU too, right?
So basically, we clamp the precision signal on the CPU where there is a potential clamp task.
Okay. Okay, then in the case of a single CPU, you can have one task that's clamped and there's another task running that doesn't like to be clamped. How are you going to handle that? Long story short, I'm thinking, all I'm saying is maybe you should clamp the utilization that's being fed into it and not feed the clamping to the governor. So the governor shouldn't know anything about any clamping, right? Okay.
Yeah, we can discuss that offline. I think we, what's the time? Okay. So the other main topic was right now we are using C groups, and here I want just to link to a previous discussion about the bandwidth controller for real time, and for CFS also is only based on time. On the time definition. We define a period and a quota within this period, and then you pick whatever frequency you can get within this time frame. With this support, eventually it's possible to say, okay, since cycles have different costs depending on how on a specific frequency you are running, we can say, okay, you get this time bandwidth, but you can run only up to this OPP. So we have a better control on how much energy eventually we'll spend, both a real-time task or a failed task, running on that CPU. So right now we extended the CPU C group controller. It was a proposal from Paul Turner and Tejun as a comment on the first proposal, and it kind of makes sense because the idea was we are still controlling how we use the CPU resources. So let's try to extend the CPU controller to make it more comprehensive on defining which kind of CPU cycle you can really get for a certain tasks. And the main complaint that is outstanding is that C groups should not be the main interface for such an API, because if we want to use the same feature on a system without C groups, we should be able. Our argument in that case is that right now we have use cases only considering C groups, so we would like to add the features at the beginning using C groups. The internal implementation is not strictly dependent on C groups, so all the clamping bits are really separated from the C group interface. And eventually in the future, if there should be the need to have a paired task API or another syscall or another interface to set these things, we can easily add it on top of what is already available today. These are, I think, the main comments. And we removed the RB3s, which was a way simpler implementation probably from a coding standpoint, but there was 1.5 overheads on Eggbench. With this reference counting approach, overheads are not really there anymore. We measure different times, it's really not affecting. And finally, there was one comment from you that there was a little bit of confusion because in the previous posting, we was referring to these features like using the term capacity clamping. And it was confusing because right now in mainline, capacity is considered a kind of a constant property of a CPU. Although we changed the OPP and it can change the current capacity over. So we changed the naming, and now the naming is utilization clamping, because the idea is that we are affecting the way we consume the utilization signal, and so at the end what we are defining is a clamp on top of the utilization that we can use eventually if we want. So these are the main changes, and this is what we posted 4 weeks ago on the list for review. Is in the same slot? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it should be.
Okay. So maybe just a few words. There is another topic which is kind of related. So what's the problem there? The utilization, so Pelt is used also to update the utilization of tasks, and there are some issues related to how Pelt behaves. And there are the main issues that it has a slow ramp-up time, so when a task starts, maybe not at the beginning, but when a task sleeps and then start again, we decay the utilization, and then it takes time to ramp up the utilization again from zero because the task was running, was sleeping for a long time. And the other issue is that it has a kind of a fast dynamic. So while the task is running, the utilization keep changing. So we are subject to making decision, scheduler decision, based on a value that is updated right after. Maybe just a little bit, but is updated, right, 1 millisecond after. And maybe the decision was completely different 1 millisecond after. In general, the main issue is that we acquire information about a task while the task is running. So the task is running, then it goes to sleep. We build up utilization, and then we completely forget about what was the utilization. At previous LPC, there was a proposal to implement a decay clamping more than as a prototype. For that, we discussed it at OSPM, and it seems to be not the proper way to go. What we did, we posted the alternative implementation or proposal, which is util est, name it, utilization estimation. Basically, the idea is to cache the utilization value every time a task completes an activation. So when the task goes to sleep, we cache the utilization value of that task. And when the task wakes up again, the PEL signal can be potentially decayed, but we can consider the history of previous activation of the task to estimate what will be the utilization of this task when PEL will ramp up completely. For periodic tasks, it's working pretty well, and in Android, for example, we have plenty of these quite periodic tasks that always generate the same utilization. And the effect is that when a task wakes up, even if it was sleeping for a long period of time, we can pick since the beginning the quite likely correct OPP to run this task. So we remove the slow ramp up features of PEL.
Is this an IIR over the of the value at sleep?
What's the question?
So low pass filter over the last value?
Yeah, exactly. So we are not changing PELT. We are caching PELT values, and we are basically building a sort of low pass filter on top of PELT.
Okay, yeah.
So the implementation poster right now has some kind of overhead. It can be probably optimized. It's probably the way we do the math. But it's really a concept, and the idea was to post it to try to see if this can make sense as an idea to improve the way we use PELT. And the same aggregation story is done also for CPUs. So when a CPU has multiple tasks within it runnable, even if PELT has to ramp up with some the estimated utilization of all the tasks, and this can easily, for example, identify that the CPU is going to be fully utilized, and we don't move another task there, risking to preempt them each other.
Okay, so to me that makes sense, Peter.
I've posted only 2 weeks.
So I guess I'm not hearing, substantial objections at this point, so I guess we just need to review the patches and then comment on the mailing list. So that would be my summary of this.
Yeah, that was just to give more or less an update.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Thank you.
You are now?
User space task replacement. But this one?
Yeah. Done. So you are next. Oh, yeah, so we'll make one break only after the half of the session, approximately, right? HDMI, let's try. Hopefully it will work. Okay. So I guess I will give you the easier mic. So while Srinivas is fighting with the computer, I will give you a short introduction to this, maybe. So this is about the problem here is that we see overheating of things, which then triggers the thermal throttling, which then causes everything to stop. And obviously, you would like to avoid this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the summary. Basically, what Matt started, like we have 14 watts parts, 15 watts, you know, 20 watts parts clamped into an ultrabook, you know, and think that, and people expect, oh, I can run 20 watts for X amount of time, but no, you will be throttled immediately because the thermal limits will come immediately. So the idea is to find out, you know, give them more user a little bit more time to, you know, before they hit thermal limits. So one of the ideas which I was experimenting was something proposed by Puneet from ARM a couple of years back to schedule on the CPU, which is cooler. I think it was prototype by using energy-aware scheduling, but I don't know whether it was ever productized or not. Here the concept is very similar, and what we have observed is most of the time for the temperature, for two-core system, the temperature is at least 20 degrees different. If you suppose you're running a spin loop on in a floating point in one CPU and another CPU is not running, you know, like idle. It's mostly for single-threaded workloads or, you know. If you go like in this graph, if you like hit like 90 degrees centigrade, then you'll be throttled very hard by the hardware. So you will see big drop in the whole score. But if you like in this case around 10 degrees, so I take a running average and when within the 10 degrees I. So when there is like within 10 degrees of order, then I use the async scheduling, like, and then move it to the core, which is colder. So like this simple F-spin like benchmark, which is shows lots of improvement, like is here the green, it shows you consistently better. But you know, at the end, after some time, nothing can survive. You know, it'll be throttled too. So the idea is to buy more and more time. And this is particularly more important for workloads like graphics. You know. So where you know you are a game player and you're trying to play a game and your frame rate will suddenly drop. And instead of that, if I give you more warning, like if I buy you 1 minute more, you have more better user experience. And the big problem happens is here. A lot of time. Here the temperature is a package temperature, which is max of all the GPUs and CPUs. So generally, when the GPU gets hot, and because it's used a lot of memory operations, the skin will get hot very fast compared to the CPU only. And so here you see we hit the skin temperature limit very fast. So this is, I'm using a frame rate graph with GL PixMac with load factor 1, which is pretty, you know, with high load factor. So you will hit the skin temperature limit and you will be throttled pretty bad. So your whole frame rate, you can see that screen is not updating, you know, as fast as before, so that gamers will see it. So in that case also, this if I move that task to some other CPU, then the overall frame rate stay consistently high for another 60 seconds at least. Particularly what happens in particularly GPU-based workloads, you have one CPU is constantly pushing data to GPU, and the GPU is in the, if suppose GPU is the other side of the die, you have a lot of thermal headroom to go before you hit that mark. So if you move the whole CPU task, which is pushing the data to the GPU, to the other side of the die, CPU where it is, then you will see that you get 60 seconds more high frame rate. But you know, ultimately, a whole die will wake, you know, heat up, and you won't have the advantage. So, but I could have done, like, instead of clamping this at around 80 degrees, I could have moved this little bit lower. You know, it will. So proactively, we can do much before and give them better experience. You know, instead of throttling at one point. So this is currently based on the ITMT with patches we sent last year, but we could have used the capacity also for this. So.
Yeah. So I guess the question is if the current approach is acceptable, or are we?
Yeah, is it a universal problem, or is it just we worry about in, you know, it's like it's just Intel only, or you want to have a solution which is more global?
I think this would be an interesting problem to solve even for mobile devices. So one part doesn't clear, it's not really clear what you're proposing there.
So
targeted. What targeted?
Core hopping, software core hopping.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah. So the way it works, it is basically, so the workload here is a single task running on a CPU, with multiple logical units, like cores or maybe hardware threads. So the idea is to move the task when the currently running unit is getting too hot. The idea is to move the task to another one, which is colder in this. And that's it, right? So.
Yeah, and I assume that like when Puneet did experiments, he did in some SoCs, ARM SoCs, so he showed good results, so I can try to replicate the same thing, so.
So I guess.
I didn't know, okay.
So I guess the answer is that this is universally useful, right?
Yeah.
If we can do it, so let's do it
in a universal
way, right?
When did migration happen? Is it like for the next couple of the task?
Yeah, it's when it's runtime. When the task will be like when on the next take, it will be moved.
Yeah.
So if you know it has some disadvantage because of cache, but at that temperature, you need to weigh the benefits.
Yep. So in some cases, you actually can avoid the throttling entirely, right?
Yeah.
So this is a big deal.
So I'm hoping that whatever solution we do come up with, you're gonna give some way to. Mentioned the layout of the CPUs in terms of relation to other hot zones?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Cool.
So in this case, we gain some time before the frame drop again. Have you tried like to experiment with the idea if we run at a maybe slightly lower frequency, maybe we can sustain this frequency longer? And is not more happy the user in that case because he never gets a frame drop?
Yeah,
because I guess, I mean, the problem is global, universal. I guess the solution might actually be different. I don't know, if you have an asymmetric system with respect to an SMP system, because you cannot really, I mean, you can op, but then you have different thermal.
Right, so I suppose initially it will be assuming a symmetric system, and then if somebody wants to, then they can be extending it, right?
But this basically makes a symmetric
system asymmetric. Yeah, that's
it.
You could assume a symmetric system, or you could maybe try to think of grouping CPUs in the C groups or something, or point is, if you can make it not SMP specific, that'll be nice. Because I think even within big little system, within the big cores, you could still want to do this, right? So it's definitely, I think, something that would be useful. So if you can hopefully make it not SMP specific, that'll be great.
Okay. Yeah, that's symmetric. Yeah.
How do you enable these features is enabled by default for all the tasks, or do you specifically
no,
say?
No, it's for all the tasks. Yeah, it's for all the tasks.
Yeah, so a follow-up question, what happens if I have not a single task, but like a series of tasks, I mean multiple tasks, so how are they migrated across?
Yeah, it's a priority. There's no multiple tasks, the different priority.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
So a question I have for the energy model experts in the room, I mean, it seems to me you're doing task placement based on a thermal cost decision, right? So could you achieve a similar behavior as what's been done here by dynamically updating the energy cost using the energy model for like the EAS solution that's been in progress for a while? I think that those costs are usually static, right? But if you could dynamically update them.
That's Matt's question, probably.
Yeah, so for Intel, we don't have the energy information, so it's not very useful.
Yes. So in theory, you could update your energy model to reflect the energy consumption at the current temperature. But if we don't have to implement that complexity, I think it would be nice. I mean, based on this, it's basically just monitoring the temperature of each core, right? And then you're basically just assigning priority to your cores. So some cores are more preferred than others. And I think that kind of solves the problem for now, at least. Yeah, and for the question about how to do it for big little systems, we already have a flag that tells you where you can sort of see in your sket domain hierarchy where big littleness is sort of observed. So you could basically just reduce the set of CPUs that you choose between when you do your thermal leveling to just a sket domain which only contains the same type of CPUs.
Yeah.
So I think it's fairly straightforward to implement it in a way that for big little systems it would work, but only do thermal leveling among CPUs of the same type.
Yeah.
I think that should be fairly straightforward to implement. One question, in your experiment, how often do you actually change the priority? How often do you switch your task between the between
the
cores?
I didn't count it, but yeah, here is around 80 degrees, 10 degrees below the temperature limit, so I didn't count it. I'm sure it's happening many times.
What frequency do you end up? How quickly do you hit
that? Oh, this every 5 seconds.
So you change core every five
seconds? Yeah, like if it's something happens, I wait for another 5 seconds before it's okay. Not like ping pong to avoid it.
Okay, so the cache impact shouldn't be too bad. I mean,
yeah.
5 seconds is eternity.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise this is... Yeah.
To answer to the question by Mike, we actually in Qualcomm we tried to this kind of thing a few years ago, and how we did that is we updated energy model kind of very frequently based on the frequency, and the result was not really great. For example, when we switched to task placement from one CPU to another CPU based on the thermal and based on temperature because of the updated frequency, updated the energy model. By the time when we switch new CPU, and if we just run the new task on the new CPU, just temperature went up so fast. So the end result, we just lost the cache affinity, so cache locality. So I wonder how maybe the SoC architecture is different, and die size is different, and distance between the cores are different. But in our case, the result was not really great. So. Yeah, I wanna find out the real difference.
Yeah, it is possible that if your all cores get hit at the same time, then
I think
you can.
I think the point is to also agree with Martin saying trying to update energy aware like energy values was pretty complicated and really didn't give good results. So if you can achieve something just by looking at temperature, maybe we will, and maybe the workload itself was high trying to update it often.
I mean, I see that we can update the energy model for task placement in the wake up, but like for load balance, for instance, we have to also cater for the capacity values for each CPU. And for me, it's a timing problem. If the temperature changes so quickly, then we can't actually change the capacity fast enough so that load balance can use the exact capacity values.
Yeah, solid tuning.
We shouldn't even try to do sub-millisecond temperature changes. It should be a longer-term process. I mean, if your CPU, we'll just rely on the hardware to not self-destroy on the really small timescales, and then the rest. If the timescales that Trini was talking about is 5 seconds, that's eternity. We can do a whole lot of. Well, once a second is still eternity, so that once a second should still work fine.
Yes, take this.
So right after the changing the test point decision, once we move to new CPU, the new CPU temperature gets up so fast, the rate of the frequency so fast, within like less than 100 milliseconds. So the result didn't make a big difference.
I guess chips have changed, so hopefully we'll see if this will work out.
I think that for us, we got clear feedback here, so we need to implement this in a generic way and possibly avoid the assumption of symmetry in the between CPUs, and that's it, right?
Then
you can test again.
Exactly. Right? I'm sure it'll be helpful.
Okay.
So. If you're going to, I mean, I know it's slightly going to implementation, but if you're going to use clamping the CPU's capacity to kind of push tasks away, does it go back to what Martin was saying? So can we come up with an interface that will work for both? Or is it the same thing we're talking about?
Yeah, so that was one of the questions, because today the experimental code is based on the interface that's intraspecific, right? And the question was if that's okay, or we should go for a more generic one. So the answer is, I'll go for the more generic one.
I'm like looking a little bit forward. If it's an interface for clamping, it'll be good if you can have multiple inputs to clamp. So aggregate the clamps, kind of. Maybe like one temperature driver would know about a particular case.
So today it's not based on clamping. It is based on making the CPUs look more attractive to the scheduler depending on the temperature. Or more or less attractive.
Like where you got this data from, you mean?
Okay. Yeah. But you can do that in terms of capacity.
Yeah. I'm saying you're going to do it in terms of capacity, let's have the ability to have multiple.
Yeah,
because one could be like a skin temperature-based input, another could be core or GPU's temperature-based input. So if you can aggregate them, that'll be nicer. So. And that might also take care of Martin's needs.
Yeah, you need to worry about.
Yeah. Cool. So I think. Let's just move ahead. With this in mind, and I think let's have a break. Like 10 minutes? Yeah? Okay.